see you coming back in here with dirty jerseys. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jerseys.
Look at anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Hello and welcome to the Balls at AGA podcast, the artist formerly known as the so-called Recap podcast and the soon-to-be titled podcast. In a week where the Carlow Hurlers drew with Galway, their footballers at top of Division 3, Loud recorded a superb win over Laois, the Mayo Hurlers are undefeated and Cavan got a hiding in their own backyard, this is what we live for and this is what this podcast is all about. It's what it was meant to be. Coming up on today's show, we're going to chat to Richard Cody of the Carlow Hurlers, who had a fairly sensational draw at the weekend against Galway. We're going to look at the entries for our competition to name this podcast because it's time to baptise this baby and we'll play against the spreads. We've gone all out today and we start with a three-man midfield. Mark Farrelly is back. Mark, how's it going?
That was a disgrace. There was no need to bring Cavan out of any of all the results.
And making his long-awaited return is Mick McCarthy. Mick, how are you?
I'm great. Yeah. I'm delighted to talk a bit of Ga. It's been all up and down the walls with rugby the last few months. So bit of Gaelic and hurling to kind of get things going. That was a lovely little dig at Cavan. What a way to start. Like I listened last week and Morris kind of sitting in chair one for the first time really this year. And it's like he had an early dig or two at Cavan and it was like, that's how you settle into that role. And then just straight off the bat again today, he knew what worked last week, Mark.
It's a joke. It's an absolute joke.
Hammered, in their own backyard.
I thought this was meant to be a weaker podcast. We're not supposed to be discussing Division 1.
I think I wanted to start and talk about Limerick and Tip, but before I get into that, I want to talk about the far more important scenario, which was Derek McGrath, lads, because I honestly think he's going to revolutionise punditry. I'll tell you what happened, actually. A couple of days ago, I was in here work late, and I put on Derek McGrath. I left here, went to the gym, and hopped on a spinning bike, and put on the Derek McGrath interview.
Humble brag.
I hate that bike, is the first thought, but secondly, I couldn't get off because I wanted to listen to the whole interview. I genuinely couldn't move. It was amazing. And I think there was a stage where, especially for you now, Mick, it's great to have you on because I think he strikes a lovely balance between the hurling pundits that you like and the hurling pundits that I like.
Who do I like?
Well, for example, he veers into the how great hurling is.
Oh yeah, yeah, I love them.
But he also, at one stage, he threw out an old cliche about Tipperary being leggy. And then proceeded to give a perfect blow-by-blow definition of what leggy actually meant. So
yeah.
Went in to talk about, well, they're after a really hard block of training at the minute. And that's quite obvious right now. And because of that, that's manifesting itself.
So it's saying all the same things, but it's backed up rather than just the bluster of knowing it, but not quite bothering to explain to the rest of us who haven't grown up in hurling exactly what it means.
Yeah, it's appealing to the hurling snob and also the humble GA fan at the same time.
I also, within a sentence of his of the first Allianz League's Sunday highlight show 2 weeks ago, he had brought up the vocabulary level of the RTE punditry team by at least 150%. He had used, in his first sentence, I think he used both catalyst and prerequisite. I'm just actually looking back through here because there was a few of us in a group having a discussion about it in a group text. I also then went and I looked at, he has a talk up on YouTube from one of the coaching conferences in Crow Park. And he uses Robert Frost's poem, The Tuft of Flowers, to explain his attitude towards coaching, which is unbelievable.
To Kill a Mockingbird, he used Mark Twain. It was amazing.
He's an English teacher. I actually was delighted to interview you were talking about. I got to spend a day with him in his classroom that he was getting ready for coming back in September, New Year. It's his first year back teaching in De La Salle. And I mean, he drops in literature references into everyday conversation all the time. It's just the way his brain works almost, you know, and he absolutely loves it. I talked to him a bit about it. I talked to him about how, why he does that. And he kind of goes, that's where my mind finds the references. I love it. I love talking to, and that's how, and also don't ever underestimate how much being a teacher helps in the regard that we're talking about, is that, you know, being able to explain things and put, you know, use nice words, you say, Mark, but still keep it simple for the rest of us, you know.
But even on that Allianz League show, there was a stage where that was the weekend they'd hammered Offaly down there, and they asked him for his take on it, and the former manager of Waterford, and the very first thing he says is, oh, they just look like they have a bit more freedom now, without any sort of ego whatsoever about his own reign. I think in terms of like hurling punditry already is at a pretty high level, I think. That trio, like if you were to have a top five trio, you'd probably have Dalo and Dunlogue in it as well. And then you add in Derek now, who I think shoots straight away. I wonder, like, is that like the Tony Romo effect in NFL, where now he's kind of setting the bar that everyone else aspires to?
Yeah, I'd be like to see him on CoCom then to see, does he start predicting where the ball is going to go and stuff, because I wouldn't be surprised.
What will happen?
But it's funny you're talking about that trio that were on RTE, because I watched this game. The rugby was obviously on Saturday night, and then like it was time for what's on, and I'd forgotten that RTE had this, and I hadn't seen, because obviously they didn't have the rugby, there wasn't on there for the advertising, and I immediately went on to air and I watched a little bit of Dublin Galway, and I kind of settled, to be honest, on Limerick and Tip. Wasn't really thinking about where else it was on. Yeah. And so I watched the whole thing on air, and Tommy Walsh is on CoCom.
Okay.
And we're talking about Derek McGrath being a game changer. I think everybody would agree, and it's probably for different reasons, that Tommy Walsh is a game changer on his own. So it's funny, we're talking about the same game and two different, very different styles of punditry. But I was on, me and Mark, not even knowing we were going to talk about this, we're talking about this like an hour ago.
Oh God, make it such a great game. Oh, the boys are hurling.
He just would interrupt the analysis. Like he'd be asked the question by the commentator, and he'd be like, ah yeah, no, it was a good line ball, all right, but just, isn't this brilliant? The lads are out there and giving it everything in the freezing cold. And this is what Ireland's all about. Bloody, and talk about Romo, right? Everyone talks about, Mars isn't able to handle my terrible impersonation. You talk about Romo, everyone thinks it's the fact that he's got such amazing ability to predict what a quarterback is going to do, such amazing ability to articulate that in such a quick amount of time. Yeah. And that is fantastic. But what actually, the reason he's so popular, and people don't even realize it when it's happening, is because of how enthusiastic he is and how much he actually loves the game. Yeah. And when he sees a quarterback do something phenomenal, he gets so excited about it and he wants to tell us how bloody good it is. And that's what Tommy Walsh gives you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Tommy Walsh could be like, oh, it's unbelievable. It's quite a great hurler. Like, and then he goes back, if he's doing the radio, and he's like, so, where are Kilkenny and Galway? A pint apiece.
After 20 minutes. Yeah.
Is that not a universal theme across hurling punditry? Like that sense of positivity. It's probably something that's lacking in football, anything.
Yeah.
It's
definitely lacking in football. I don't know if hurling, I think when hurling's at its best, people do become evangelists for it. And I'd rather use the word evangelist than snob. But I think, though, it could be, they slip into the, some of the older pundits, let's say, slip into the same traps as, you know, the RT football panel.
Milan.
Like, I mean, if something's a sweeper, then it's automatically bad. Yeah. As opposed to, well, hold on, if you read David Fitzgerald's book, if you listen to Derek McGrath talk about it, or whatever,
big time,
there's a lot of variations on what a sweeper is, but they don't think about that.
John Milan is the other one who would be like, everything is the greatest.
Brilliant.
Like, he's just, and it's not a sort of, some other times people can be annoying in the way it's the greatest thing, like, but he's just not, he's just genuinely enthusiastic.
Yeah.
And
loving
it. Bernard Flynn is a lot like that in the football. I've never listened to a bad game that Bernard Flynn was commentating.
Maybe it's a radio commentary.
And not because, it might be. It's not because the games are necessarily that good that Flynn was commentating. Like, he commentated, I caught the last, coming out of the game at the weekend, I caught the last 10 minutes of like Monaghan and Roscommon. And I think the ball was in play for 2 minutes. And Bernard Flynn, oh, Jesus, we're in the game now. Oh,
you're so right, actually. I've listened to him so many times that it'd be like a Leinster first round match between Westmeath and Offaly. And you see the highlights of the Sunday game, and they can't even find highlights for a 30 second roundup.
Yeah.
And Bernard would have you believe that it was the best game he's ever seen. That's a great thing, though. That on radio, that's universally positive.
Yeah.
Because it drags you in. And it's telling a story that doesn't necessarily even need to be true.
I actually think, based off like that, the likes of McGrath as well, that this is, and also this new system that League Sunday have finally started. They showed a Division 2 game first, something we routinely
Meath and Donegal
against. They extended out the coverage, so that's now an hour and 45 minutes, which if anything is probably too long. And also then you've got TG Carr on a Monday night if you want to watch the Division 2 games. Like, I was kind of annoyed on Sunday that I couldn't get to see why Jamie Clark was sent off, but you get to see it on the Monday anyway, so that's not RT's job to show that. Like, they, you know what they do well with these kind of new pundits. Like, there's definitely I think they are seeming to be listening. There was one of the routine complaints was the idea that they're always starting with hurling first, and last week they started with the football. Like, they seem to be listening and adapting to that. I actually think it's an unbelievably exciting time to be a GAA fan.
Yeah. Who's going to win the All-Ireland? Dublin? And
can we talk very briefly?
No, I agree with you. Now, coverage is in. If you're just taking that alone, I think that because and you have to take on against, what is in the field.
Very briefly, just because I feel like we've gone a good, it must be a good 10 minutes now without bringing up Cavan. But I just wanted to, when you mentioned the Tony Romo thing, it's like one of the interesting things of the weekend. I think it was because the crowd, it was a bit quiet at the game in Breffni, so you could actually hear a lot what the players were saying on the pitch. But secondly, the Kerry were bringing back all the players. They had 15 men inside their own 65 many at a time. And this whole new evolving role of a goalkeeper, Raymond Gallagher in goals for Cavan, who plays outfield at club level, he was out virtually on his own, 21, sometimes nearly 45. And he was directing, the other way you'd see this sort of play, hand passing it around in front of the blanket. He was directing lads around as they were doing it. It's almost like he was shouting, you know, like Omaha, blah blah blah, different calls, except rather than the ball not being, you know, in the scrimmage, the ball was just being hand passed around from about his own 21, sometimes even further out. So he was out direct, lads, and he was like, right, go left, blah blah blah, whoever it was, and you could hear. And then he'd shout like at, I think it was Pádraig Faulkner or someone, who was like, Podge, go now, when Podge had like moved over to the right position in the field to make a run through that press and the wall that Kerry had, which meant he literally had moved them all around until he saw a space in front of one of them that they could go into. He roars, Podge, Podge, go now, and whoever had the ball just hand passes it over that blanket into the space. And I was like, this is actually turning into American football, or even like maybe a point guard in basketball, where he's directing the whole thing.
But that's not a good thing. Like that speaks to kind of an increasing trend in Gaelic football, where they like this demand for direction. Like, I remember being at the Carlo Leash game last year, and Carlo blasted 4 kickouts straight out over the line, trying to go long, and got turned over by Leash, like straight going long to midfield. And then Stephen Porter runs onto the field, whispers something in his ear, and the next 3 he goes short. Why does it take a coach to tell you to do that? Why can't players think themselves?
Is there another perspective on that, though, that he has a view of the whole field, whereas everybody else is trying to run their angles and this is more a kind of a, I see the spaces you're not seeing.
Sure, sure.
And it's using a player that you have on the field. The only person you're allowed to put in that position is one of your players. It's like, you know, you can't put a coach out there.
It's been a long established kind of goalkeeper's role in terms of when you're defending, that it's like, you know, go left. If you're sort of, you're defending, if you're eyeing the ball and you're kind of tracking back and you're in that spot, he's like, go 5 yards left, 5 yards forward, or whatever, to get you in a good defensive position. He was doing the same, but nearly as an attacking position.
Okay.
It was like, now go, because he could see, obviously, the person with their eyes in the ball. Or, you know, who were looking at the, like, Podge is probably looking at the ball. He's not looking at whether there's space there to go into her. But I'm not saying whether it's a good or bad thing. It was just something I noticed at the weekend. I was like, this is really interesting, the way that he's out literally directing everything. Yeah. It's like a coach on the pitch.
Can we go back to one very quick thing about punditry before we leave it?
Yeah.
Is that there's a difference between analysis and something to do to use your machines to make it look like analysis. And if I never see those bloody circles that don't have any defined lines and as to where what the circle is showing again. And I'm sorry, but League Sunday, for all their improvements, that Sean Cavan and Kieran Whelan were using them a good bit. It's just like, here's a load of space. But there's space around the space. I don't know what you're talking about. Nor like that should be to each defender or something like that. It has to have a line at the end of it.
Remember the one a couple of years
Pat's
ago?
Pat Spillane's awful for it. Look, a random box. That's how you beat the blanket.
Do you remember the one a few years ago when Shane Curran just kept drawing random triangles between bottom players? They're going to triangles up the field. Like, that's just 3 players.
So the next step is actually to use those machines properly for something of use.
Speaking about punditry, we'll go back to that Limerick game. Wow, they were impressive. Like that looks like a team that... if Tipperary are slowly developing, Limerick look right back where they were last year. Like, there seems to be no let up.
Yeah, but my take on it was that they were level, or Limerick were maybe a point up with like 15 to go. And if you were thinking, where should each team be? And every time anyone heard anything from Limerick hurler over the last 6 months, they were in Mexico or America or somewhere. You know, they just they had a long winter, you know.
Yeah, and playing FIFA on balls.ie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And doing media appearances, let's face it, as well. But like, handle it all very well. They always just came across as good guys. But I think what you've seen on this week was that it's not going to go to their head. They're still committed. They're still going to be committed. Good guys as well. And I would have expected the opposite thing to happen than what did, which would Tipperary stretch their legs, Limerick just get a little bit left behind and ultimately lose by 2 or 3 points, but not worry too much about it going into the next day. Instead, they're the only team in Division 1A to have 2 wins. In an incredible parody again, that is the 1A in hurling at the moment. But like, you know, and Tip were completely left floundering. Like, and like, they brought on Keane Lynch, they brought on Kyle Pat Hayes, Ryan. Pat Ryan nearly scored the exact same goal he got against Cork. It was insane. He just pulled in instead of going for the same shot. But yeah, just bringing on those lads, and they just looked fresh as daisies at the end, and they did that warm up with the kids in the Gaelic grounds, which was great. You know what I mean? But there's so everything they do seems right at the moment. Now it's like we were talking about Galway like this time last year, and it doesn't last. But at the moment, you're like, Jesus, Limerick are just flying.
Is the big difference between Limerick this year and what Galway did last year is that Limerick do have these, like Conor Boylan and a Piercy wing forward started that game and scored 2 points. These players that we were hoping Galway would introduce, and they just didn't. They're probably, like, I think it was a kind of regular complaint of mine that the likes of Brian Kincannon didn't get more game time, but maybe Limerick are doing that.
Yeah, well, let's see what happens.
Because also the fact that this time last year, Galway were beaten, they're playing Offaly and Dublin and the likes, it wasn't up in Division 1A.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, if Limerick are challengers in the hurling, then it looks like Mayo are certainly going to be challengers in the football this year. They were the other time I was
saying that after Saturday night.
Listener who isn't from Cavan, that means that Mayo are playing Cavan this weekend.
No, they do look very good. It is worrying.
Do you know what I'm amazed by this Mayo team is the amount of
thrown for shite.
What would you call like rangy kind of runners? Like there's about four different lads who, if you took their head off and put it on one of those, like for example, if you look at somebody like McDonough, who started wing forward and was amazing at the weekend, if you put a mask over his face, you could think that was Jim O'Connor, you could think it was Durkin. It's all the similar kind of big athletic physiques, like kind of runners. They all seem to have backgrounds in athletics as well, which definitely seems to help with that team. Like they seem to breed these players.
There's also like a couple of players like Jay, like there's players starting to shine. Like you'd say, right, like Keith Higgins is still, I would say name Keith Higgins as one of the older players that could be on the way in, but he's still unbelievable.
He'd pop up a corner forward.
You know, you'd say, geez, Donny Vaughan, Colin Boyle, but like they're still hanging in there. And then you've got like Jason Doherty becoming more and more important to that team every year. You've got players who are going to establish themselves. That even Durkin's another example, who wasn't there, say, I know he was there a couple of years ago, but like 3 or 4 years ago he wasn't. He wasn't at the level of them lads, but now he's probably surpassed them.
Both Higgins and Durkin sticking to their critics who didn't stick them in their all-county team to take on the Dubs.
I put Durkin in it.
But actually, do you know, like the thing, it's funny because that is so important and there are still lads like Kevin McLaughlin, I think, still to come back in as well. But like Andy Moran is still at the centre of nearly everything they do, you know, and but he could do that for another 5 years. He's just winning the ball and laying a smart hand pass. Yeah, and the mark, exactly. Like, but I thought their ball movement was just brilliant. Like, and it's like, it's funny, you need all those athletes to get you into that position. But then once their brains are doing it once they're up front, like once they have the ball in the 21, like they had three quick passes. You don't know what's happening. The ball's over the bar. You know what I mean? Just really, really smart running off shoulders, and Moran normally has three options when he has that hand pass that we see him do 20 times a game, you know?
See, that's a great point, because when you look at the other teams who might want to try and take on the Dublin, which, like, let's face it, that's ultimately the goal of anybody this year, is like, how are we going to match Dublin? And if you look at Donegal at the weekend, if you watch that game, like Donegal had Jamie Brennan inside, and Jamie Brennan was actually really good to show for the ball, but once he got it, he couldn't do it by himself and he didn't have enough options to hand it off. Whereas Andy Moran is also great to show for a ball and then has three options to pass it off. And it's somebody like you'd wish Galway, we'll talk about Galway in part three, but you wish Galway would do the same thing in terms of
check the spread quick.
You wish Galway would do their own thing in terms of with Ian Burke. Like, why, if you're picking a half forward line who, like, let's face it, are midfielders or wing backs, then Ian Burke's options when he does get on the ball eventually is going to be so limited, because he's only going to have one, maybe two, and he needs three coming off him, and he'd find them eventually then.
He's unbelievable. If Ian Burke was in the Mayo full forward line, Mayo would have won that Ireland.
Yeah, spin-out.
Definitely with James Horan, because Mayo do Dublin have that. I remember Peter Canavan going through of how they keep the full forward line. No one ever stays, and they just move through the full forward line all the time. Mayo sort of do that with the central part, say where your centre half forward position is. They keep that area of the pitch completely open, because there's going to be someone coming through it at 100 mile an hour when the ball goes to get played back into it, whether it's Keegan, whether it's Durkin, whoever is coming through from the half back line, or any of the half forwards coming from deep. So, like, if you had Burke and Andy Moran's two-man full forward line, I don't know if they should put in some, is there any granny rule? Is it do deck and rice in it?
Neither of whom made our all-county team last week either. Next up,
Declan Rice.
I think that's time to call that there when we start talking about Rice. Next up, we'll talk to Richard Cody of the Carlow Hurlers.
You think you're going to do it?
We're going to do it. We're going to do it.
All right, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Richard Cody now of the Carlo Hurlers. Richard, how's it going?
Good, good. I'm all good now, thanks.
And I can imagine, yeah, it must be a pretty nice week after the result you had last week. You'd drawn with Galway.
Yeah, I guess there's been a bit of a pep in our step there, I suppose, since Sunday. Yeah, it's been Sunday was a nice result, I suppose, a nice game or a nice scoreline at the end of the day, I suppose. Yeah, so this week started off pretty good, to tell you the truth. There, we've been fairly inundated with texts and congratulations and stuff. So yeah, it's been a good few days, I suppose, to be from Carlo or be a Carlo hurler, I guess. Yeah.
And even like whatever about the result, just kind of the manner of it. Like for those that don't know, it was actually a fight back by yourselves, kind of a late free. Like that kind of heart must be really encouraging, kind of moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose it was a game. Yeah, like you said, we were the ones trailing there for the majority of it. We didn't actually take the lead at any stage, but we got the equalising point at the end. It was nice to get the equalising point, but I suppose looking back on it a bit, and even I suppose in the last 5 or 10 minutes, we were maybe a little bit disappointed that we didn't actually get ahead at any stage, or we didn't actually get a winning score, I suppose, because we felt we could have, I suppose, at some stage looking back at it there, we could have actually maybe got our nose ahead. But look, at the end of the day, before the game, if you had said we were going to get a point at home to Galway or get a draw at home to Galway, we probably would have taken hand in all, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious, you know, like last year, I know there was a bit of disappointment amongst the team about the manner of the Limerick results and kind of the perceived gap between them and yourselves. And that was then, obviously, after that, they went on to win on Ireland. Like, does the results like the one against Galway provide much more encouragement about where you're at currently?
Yeah, I think so. Like, it was, yeah, as a team, I suppose, or personally, on a personal level, I suppose, we were a little bit disappointed the way the Limerick game went for us last year. There was a few factors to look into, I suppose. The fact that there was 6 days after, or maybe it was a full week, 7 days after the Joe McDonagh final. We put a lot of effort into that final, and that was our main goal at the end of the day. And I suppose the Limerick game was an added bonus. So we put all of our focus and all of our energy into that Joe McDonagh final, I suppose. And then to turn around against Limerick, who, like you said, ended up being Ireland champions, and we've seen the start they've made this year already. Again, they're a serious outfit. So, you know, come away from that game, we were a little bit disappointed. We could have done a little better, I think, on the day ourselves. We were probably like took a little bit to get up to the pace of it. And I suppose looking back on it, it probably opened our eyes a little bit as to what was going to be ahead of us again this year. So, yeah, like last Sunday's result, I suppose it probably, I know Galway, like maybe some say, or it might say, they didn't have a full strength team, or maybe they weren't going at full pelt, or maybe they hadn't as much training done so far this year. But like at the same time, though, I think it's more of a realistic look at where Carlo are at the minute.
Yeah.
I think the weekend before, like against Dublin, I think we learned even a lot that night in the space of 7 days. We learned a lot about ourselves and about maybe what was needed and what was needed at the 1B level, or what was needed at that little step up. So I think even that day in Parnell Park, we probably learned a little bit more, and we were probably more ready for Galway last Sunday, I guess.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting that you can kind of take that like that learning experience. I'm curious, you touched on the idea that of like where Limerick and Galway are now in the league, and then obviously for yourselves, like after winning, I know you kind of had the dual threat of trying to win a league and trying to win the Joe McDonagh and had such a successful year. This year, do you prioritise maybe championship now that you're promoted, or is it kind of a dual front again?
This year now, like I suppose last year, neither either. I suppose last year we definitely had the league at the start of the year. We kind of sat down and definitely we said, you know, the league was the one we kind of needed to, we were looking at winning anyway, because Joe McDonagh was, it was the first year of it, kind of, with kind of stepping into new waters, I suppose, or new territory, and we didn't really know what was kind of ahead of us in that sense. But we had been to a few league finals before and we were beaten, and we kind of were disappointed in that aspect, and we felt that we needed to get up to the 1B level to kind of maybe push on a little bit. So started last year, we kind of definitely targeted the league, and then after that, I suppose, we kind of obviously after winning the league, we kind of set our sights on the Joe McDonagh, and we knew it was going to be tough because we were going in, there was a mix of the 1B and we say 2A teams in that, and we knew the 2A teams were good, and then there was Leash and Antrim who were probably playing at a higher level that year, and we had the two of them away, so we kind of were like kind of going into unknown territory a little bit, and we kind of said we'd take it game by game, I suppose, and that's what we kind of did, and look, it all went well for us, and I suppose we had momentum behind us, and thankfully it all ended up in us getting to the final in Crow Park, and look, it was another good day for us in that. So this year then, like, I think it's different, I suppose. We're up another level in the league, and then we're up another level again in Leinster Championship, I suppose. So we've kind of sat down and we've kind of said a few short-term goals, I suppose. But we definitely can't be looking too far ahead. I think Championship is, and Leinster Championship is down the road. It's kind of put to the back of our minds, I think, at the minute now. So, like, I think at the minute we can only, at the level we're going and playing Dublin and playing Galway last week, and now we've got a very tough task going down to Waterford again in 2 weeks. So we've kind of decided that, you know, at this stage, you know, we kind of need to just take it game by game, and we can't look too far down the road.
Yeah, and is that process, like you mentioned, that after the what you learned from the Parnell Park game, is that a, like, trashed out in the team meetings, or is that something that's kind of instinctive? Like, how does that learning process go?
Yeah, I suppose a little bit of both, kind of. Okay. You know, after the game, we'd probably be chatting on the way home there from Parnell Park as a group or as teammates or whatever. We'd be very chatting about where do we think it went wrong, or right or wrong. And then the following night, back at training, and we'd sit down and have a chat as well before we went out training and see, you know, where were the areas that we thought were good, and then where were the areas we thought were bad and that needed improvement, and, you know, trash out a few ideas as to maybe what scenario we come up with to maybe counteract these things. So yeah, I just thought against Dublin, like, I suppose we had a good first half and we were in a good position at half time, I suppose, but I think coming out in the second half, they upped their ante a bit, and they kind of caught us a little bit flat footed, a little bit cold, I think. And I think the first 10 or 15 minutes against Dublin, that was where the real damage was done, I think. So, you know, the other day against Galway, then we kind of said to ourselves, like, at half-time, when we got in at half-time, we regrouped. We said, you know, like, this can't happen, what happened in Parnell Park. The first 10 or 15 minutes are vital to us. So, you know, we kind of need to steady down the ship and you know, don't let the gap get any wider. It was 3 points or 4 points at half-time. So, like, don't let the gap get any longer, and stay in the game as long as we can, and you know, you never know what's going to happen at that, and that's the way it panned out, I guess. So it worked well for us last Sunday, I guess.
Yeah, and then I suppose off the back of that, and even the year you had last year, and the football is going well too, it must be like a really nice time to be from Carlow. Like, I could even see the Carlow Twitter page last night celebrating Padraig Amron scoring the FA Cup. Like, there seems to be a really positive mood at the minute.
Yeah, absolutely, I guess. You know, both camps, like you said, hurling and football are in a good place at the minute. And you know, we probably train similar nights as well, and we've both in the centre of excellence there in Fenna. And you know, you can feel off both camps. There's a good vibe and a good positive vibe, and you know, kind of you bounce off one another, yeah, as well that way, I suppose. And then to top it all off, I suppose I'd be friendly enough with Padraig, and I was delighted to see him scoring first and foremost, and then even like going on to win the game, and sure, what a tie they're facing now against Man City. It's amazing, and stuff dreams are probably made of, and I'm delighted for them. And like you said, it's a great time to be kind of from Carlow, and there's a lot of positive stuff happening on the sporting field at the minute, like. So yeah, look, it's very positive at the minute, and we'd be very hopeful that it could continue for the near future, maybe the distant future as well.
Well, it's really interesting to say that now, because that's something I think we've dealt with on this podcast before, and it's the idea of
not the kind of the present, like the future, what's coming for Carlow hurling or for these kind of so-called weaker counties and the development of hurling. And I'm kind of wondering, like, based off the success now, I know you're involved in Savage work yourself in trying to promote hurling within the county. Where do you see that work going now? Like, is this a kind of a crucial time to capitalise on that?
I think so. You know, I think that the hurling following we saw last Sunday against Galway, it's definitely increasing, it's definitely gathering, and it's definitely gathering momentum, I suppose. If you didn't know, or if like people on the outside were looking in and kind of didn't know like much about Carlow, didn't know the story within Carlow, was like we have four senior hurling clubs at the minute, and probably have maybe 10 hurling clubs overall. And you know, to compete at the top level for a sustained period of time, I think, I don't know, definitely need a wider pool of hurlers in the county and a wider pool of youngsters, I suppose, starting up hurling, I guess. So, look, it's not for us. We're probably doing what we can at the minute, or it's positive enough on our front at the minute, but definitely down the line, it's a small little bit of a worry. You'd be wondering, can it be sustained where we are at the minute, and can we hopefully stay there for the long term? But I guess there's more work to be done. Maybe we'll probably have to put our team caps on again, or in the near future, I suppose. And you know, like, don't get me wrong, there's so much work going on underage and from the county board, and there's so much that we're trying to do at the minute. So like, look, we'll be hopeful that there'll be a new generation coming along behind us again, and they can even push it on, and they can stay where we are and maybe even go another level again. So at the minute, we're doing what we can, and I suppose that's all we can do at the minute.
Yeah, and in terms of addressing that, like, what would you like to see happen now? I mean, is this something that the GA need to be more conscious of? I know we've spoken to Paul Rouse in the past, who thinks it's kind of abject failure that the game hasn't developed beyond the way it is now. Like, would you like to see more kind of hierarchical intervention in this kind of, you know, development?
Yeah, it's a tough one, kind of. I think it's kind of a catch-22. I know, like, there's talk about finances and I suppose bigger counties being able to afford better, like, training and stuff like that, or more being pumped into them that way, I guess. But I don't know, like, it's a tough one, I suppose. I know that, like, I can understand the GAA and Croke Park have got so many things on their mind or on their hands at the minute, that it's not easy to always, I suppose, help everyone out or do the bit. I'm sure they're trying to do the best they can, and I know, like, they're definitely after, like, the hurling structures at the minute, with like the Leinster Championship and the Munster Championship, and I suppose the Joe McDonald, they're definitely facilitating teams as best as they can, and look, sure, we're probably after benefit from the winning the Christy Ring in 17, and then winning the Joe McDonald, we're probably taking stepping stones like that, I guess. So, you know, on a structural point of view, I think there are definitely getting things right. On a level basis, I suppose, or a level playing field for money-wise or financial-wise, I'm not sure, but I don't know where you start or where you finish kind of with that, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess that's probably not your battle to fight for right now. Your focus is more on field stuff.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. We can only turn up at trains, I suppose, and do our bit on the pitch, and I suppose after that, it kind of needs to be, it's kind of another, or a top board, I suppose, or the county board or something like that, needs to kind of be dealing with that kind of aspect. But at the minute, I suppose, we've got enough of on our hands with Waterford down the road in 2 weeks' time, and probably trying to remain in 1B and that. So we've plenty to be thinking about ourselves as players, more so than wondering what's going on up in GAA headquarters.
Yeah, that's great. Richard, thanks a million for joining us.
No problem at all. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, look at Cavan. It was a big weekend, it said. I was very excited, obviously. Yeah, look at. Because I feel like we've gone a good 10 minutes out of bringing up Cavan. We like, we like, we like. live music and people there on the floor. Yeah, look, I believe my phrase was, mark my words, Cavan will not be bet on Sunday. And then they were bet.
Great stuff from Richard there. I think that's actually a fascinating point about, like, the mood obviously is really positive in Carlo right now, but even like, I think he basically admitted there that you're still kind of conscious of the idea that how long will it last if there's not, you know, work done on the ground as well. I think that's something that as a county they're quite conscious of.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, they've, you know, we've had the fact that they're in the Liam McCarthy this year and the new structure kind of adds a little, it's going to last a little bit longer this time, but we've had Carlo making waves in the league before. They've never drawn with the, you know, one of the best teams in the country or anything like that, but you know, they've made waves and they've had big wins. I think they beat Wexford a few years ago, and then they kind of slip, and we know that there's hurling there, but then you worry, is it ever sustainable? So that's like the, you know, it's almost like there's two jobs in Carlo at the moment. You make them competitive at senior level, and then it's like, use this goodwill to completely transform a club level and development team level, whatever it might be, to try and keep it going. But it's exciting. Like, they get, if you look at what happened to Offaly against Dublin this weekend, and you see Carlo's performance against Dublin plus what they did against Galway, you know, that's starting to seem like that's a trend. Now, maybe they're raring to go for this time of year when everybody else isn't, but even still, they would never have been able to bridge that gap before.
Definitely, you know? Yeah. I also think it's like, it's really kind of encouraging to hear this idea that the success, like that he spoke about, you know, the footballers and the hurlers kind of having a vibe together, like when things are good, things are great as a county. And I think that's kind of a nice, it's nice to see that kind of unification, I suppose. Like, even the hurlers have really tried to focus on like keeping this going by bringing in young players.
Yeah.
Paul Cody, who we spoke to last year, he didn't play at the weekend, but they said a young guy, Chris Nolan, who's only 20, I think, ended up hitting 4 points. So that kind of, I suppose, development, I suppose we're trying to build that long term, which obviously they shouldn't be focused with, but he clearly is.
Yeah, it's great to see that if the footballers are doing it kind of as one, because there's no reason that a rising tide can't, whatever the bloody expression is that I'm actually getting confused about.
Lift all boats.
You lift all boats, yeah, not sink all boats, which was what was going to come out of my mind there. But like, you know, seriously, rising, Carlo, etc. The top of Division 3 and like their best ever performances back-to-back weeks in the league. Like, let's keep going. Carlo can win all Ireland.
Any match reports, lads, the Carlo lads, send us our way if you're listening.
Oh, yeah,
Sean.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we might not be the so-called weaker podcast anymore, but we definitely want Paul Broderick to send us in some stuff.
It's funny you mention that, because we do need some title for this podcast. Okay. And we put out a call last week for people to send in their best names, and we got an unbelievable response. So to go through the list here, I actually haven't written down who submitted them, so I'll have to go back and find it when we pick out a winner. But I think I'll run through our shortlist and I'll let the two of you trash out what you reckon could be the winner.
Okay.
So quickly to go through it all, we got breaking balls, fisticuffs and sideline cuts, outside the D, over the black spot, over the bar, outside the 40, mark up, in and around the panel.
Mark up, I like. Mark has to be on every week then, though.
And then taking it one podcast at a time. We're only going to take it one game at a time. The Spanish woman need not listen podcast.
Dead right.
Don't know if we'll be excluding full nationalities, but...
One of my personal favourites was, you have to appreciate this by going to our Twitter to check it out in full, but the Nudie News. Nudie Hughes.
I think that should be a segment. We just get Nudie Hughes on every week. It's good. Nudie News. No, the Nudie News.
Or just
there's a man, by the way, on co-commentary who has never commented on a bad game.
And finally, we have the Amateur Whistlers. So there's a lot of suggestions there. The problem, I suppose, is trying to narrow it down to one.
Yeah. Or
also
some better ones.
Some of them, we have good ones, but they're too long.
That's what I thought too, yeah.
We need to be more succinct. So there's a couple of different things here, right? Maybe we leave the competition open for
a
while.
We could go another week, yeah.
Yeah, and even people who've entered, thanks very much, but we're going to give you some positive feedback. It needs to be short enough so it doesn't get cut off in a social... This is all the stuff we have to fucking... apologies for the bad language, but you understand, have to put up with on the internet, and then you'll come giving out to us about something or other. This is what we're dealing with. It has to be short enough so that it doesn't get cut off by the character limit in Twitter and Facebook headlines. So if we have a podcast in there, it needs to be, I think, a 3-word max name, maybe 4 if it's a short word. It needs to have a name that, you know, sponsors won't be put off by. So anything with big balls, yeah, or hairy balls or any of them,
or
things
just
that,
like,
you're gonna,
this show is a load of bollocks. That's not a great name. Like,
no.
You know,
yeah. So only that stuff. Why we think it's funny? It's not gonna, we're not gonna have to go with it, because at the end of the day, we want someone to sponsor this podcast. What else? GA cliches are generally long, so that's an issue. I did like the amateur, what was it, amateur whistlers?
Amateur whistlers, I like that too.
I like, yeah, the Where's Your Whistle podcast, but that's my own suggestion.
I don't know, I like Mark Up.
But then Mark has to be a regular feature.
Yeah, but sure, look, it'll get him off his arse. Yeah. So he can come in and hear and back onto his arse.
So I think we've landed that we're going to put a call out, we're going to extend the competition for a week.
Yeah, yeah. Not, nothing like over the bar or over the black spot or anything like that, that kind of doesn't really make any sense, you know what I mean? I think it has to make a little bit of sense to,
like,
what
to
the
this
show
podcast,
is, you,
yeah,
know, yeah.
For instance, the best name I've heard so far is the Boss.E GA podcast, yeah. Like, it's not funny, but it is exactly what it says in the tin.
Before we let you go, we've got a game to finish off. Guess the spreads. Mark is the reigning intern champion at the minute.
But defending undefeated champion.
Why are you the interim champion?
Because I can't compete.
Okay, sorry. Well, do you know what? I'll tell you what then. If I'm back in next week, if I'm selected, I'll do this part for you if you want, so you can get a run at it.
Okay, yeah, I like that, yeah. So we actually don't have any hurling this weekend, but I did include the club hurling game between Ballyhale and Ballygunner. As everyone knows, there's 2 games on this weekend. St. Thomas is playing Cushendall. You can read about that up on Buzz.ie. There's a great interview there with Neil McManus by PJ Brown. The game we're looking at is Ballyhale versus Ballygunner. So you've got Leinster champions versus Munster champions. I want Mark to tell me who's the favourite and what's the spread.
I won't know here. I don't think there's anything you can say that's wrong.
I'm going to say Ballyhale are the favourites and they are -2.
Okay, Mick.
I was going to say Ballygunner, but sure, obviously, to be closer, I'll say Ballyhale -1.
Yeah, you're right, spot on.
Ballyhale -1. Yeah. Oh, God, because if I'd gone first, I would have said Ballygunner -1. There you go.
Oh, so lame.
Is Shefflin still playing?
No, he's managing.
Managing them?
Yeah.
I should probably know that.
Ballyhale, they're Limerick, aren't they?
Have they ever won anything before?
Our next game, we're back to football now for the rest of this. Mayo, Cavan, and Mick, I'm going to go with you first to guess.
This is in Castlebar.
It is, yeah.
Mayo -3.
I can't guess the same as him, can I?
You can, but you take away a lot of the fun of the game.
And you're 1-0 down.
I can't see. I think it's Mayo -3 exactly.
Should we go for it if it's what you think?
Mayo -2.
Yeah, I'd go lower if I was having the pick.
No, you're wrong. It's Mayo -4.
Oh,
wait.
Jesus. Cavan would be interesting.
Sure, Cavan haven't been bet by more than 3 points in the league so far.
Sure, that might be only like a 10. That might only.
Kerry. Galway.
That might be only like a 10-7 match. It could be low scoring. Like.
Yeah. That's a good bet.
I don't know why it would be,
Cavan,
but it could
sorry,
be.
Sorry, Cavan +4 is a good bet.
Yeah. I'd agree with that, actually. But.
Cavan,
in other news, it's 2-0 to me here.
Cavan and Mayo to be under whatever the spread or whatever the total score
is. Think?
Like we said last week on this podcast, if you listen to us, forget about the other ones where we were like, oh, you know, Donegal easily beat the handicap. That was a slip of the tongue. That didn't happen. You imagined it. What we did say, though, was that Westmeath and Carlow were guaranteed to be under the total points, and the Cavan and Kerry were guaranteed to be under the total points.
What's next, Mark?
That would have been 2 even bets for you.
Monaghan versus Galway.
Does Mick to go first?
No, I went first there, second.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Monaghan versus Galway. Jesus, is there a spread on this at all? Monaghan, is it Monaghan's at home? Mm-hmm. Monaghan -1.
Flipper. I'll go -2 then, because I think what happened.
Oh, you're on fire.
Yeah.
How about in -2 against
Galway? Well, given what they did to Dublin in their last home game, you think that Galway wouldn't have as much respect, you know?
Galway that have turned up definitely last week, probably the week before. Actually, like I was really disappointed with the Galway performance on Saturday. Like, you take into consideration that they're a month behind in their development, but it's just the, I think there's a fundamental flaw in this kind of zonal defence that you have when you're trying to get every man accounted for behind the ball. But against a team like Dublin, it just doesn't work because you don't have it then when the ball, when you do turn the ball over, they'll press you high. So it just actually doesn't matter unless you break quickly, and they don't do that right now. So it's it's kind of,
Galway are far too slow out of defence.
Yeah, which is a massive issue, especially
with
Team Dublin.
Especially now with the mark, that there is the option there, even when the blanket defence is back, that if you can hit a man, you've got that. Like, teams are worried. You can't. You're always kind of looking behind you now. If you lined up zonally, usually people are going to try hand pass through you. Whereas now, there's that option of the long ball in. So you're kind of watching it back. You can't really press properly when you get back into that 15 or whatever zonal defence.
I think it'll make a big difference when they get the Carfin lads back, and maybe like if somebody like Ian Burke, I think, is ready made for this mark, the idea that he could win his own ball. And
it make a big difference though? Because I actually was purposely going to stay out of this conversation though, but I just wonder, when that's your philosophy, that's your manager's philosophy, you've got, let's face it, a negative manager. He's always been negative. I think it works against Galway's natural style, and that's not to say they should go out and be naive and, you know, just kicking Jaff Allen points from, you know, 50 yards all the time, but Galway have a way of playing that I think they're more comfortable playing with, and you can still be structured in defence. But I think, as you said earlier, you're playing half backs in the half forward line. You know, you're basically playing three forwards in every game. I don't think it suits them, and I don't think they're getting the best out of the ability. This is the best Galway team you've had in 20 years, 15 years? 15 years, probably. And they're not getting the most out of it.
And I think, like, maybe the, like, I think the, say, like, half forwards last year, something like Eamon Brannigan could be an amazing forward. Like, he could shoot the lights out, but it's because he's being hamstrung by this idea that he's constantly running back. Like, he's trying to cover so much ground. I wonder, his GPS stats must be off the charts.
Like, but they run the ball back too much as well. Like, Shane Walsh puts too much on himself running the ball, and he, especially this time of the year, where
across the field,
where it's like the ball is slippy. There's lads tackling. The likelihood of you spilling it or, you know, getting caught, turned over in the tackle is so much higher.
Yeah.
And it's like, just let it in. I know it sounds like an outlad saying it, but especially when you have the mark, you can just let it in.
There has to be some, you don't have to be an outlad saying let it in all the time for you to say sometimes you can let it in. There has to be some mixture to the way you play the game. Like,
We'll move on to talk to
football annoys me.
This is now a non-contest. But
it's 3-0, is it?
You can salvage some pride here. Leitrim Antrim. Is this you, Malmick? Yeah.
What's four? Is this in? Leitrim minus five.
Jesus, no
high
way.
High scores in the
league.
Well,
look, I'm just going to go Leitrim minus four because it's a guaranteed win.
Leitrim minus two. So
yeah.
Are Antrim good this year? Yeah, they are, we stopped doing the so-called weaker podcast. The Division 4 just fell off my radar. It's terrible. Just goes to show you the media coverage means everything.
Yeah.
The final game from Division 4 is Waterford Derry.
Derry in Division 4.
I got a doing with Waterford at the weekend. Thought they'd beat the handicap against Limerick. They didn't. This will have to be Derry minus 5.
It's in Waterford.
Yeah, it is.
I'd say minus... I'd obviously say minus 6. I'd say it's about minus 8 though.
Oh, you're on fire. Minus 6. Yeah, 4-1. You ran away with that.
Do you know what? About four of them that I got wrong, I was like, I went off, or four of them that I got dead right, I went off what you said and went,
yeah,
amended
just
it to the one correct more. One. Yeah. Jesus, I dominated there now. You'll have to have me back next week.
So maybe we do need to bring back in the 2 points rule for being spot on.
Although I think so.
I won 4-1 there. It's fine.
that would have been an even more hammering.
Yeah, it would have been. But I think that's the way it should be done. I think you're right. When it got to the part of the championship last year where there were only like two or three games on, it was unfair. Because if you got one right spot on, then the game was over. Yeah. But when you've got a big list, the more spot on you are, the better.
We're out of time. As we said, we are in need of some new suggestions for a title for this podcast. So you can send those to thegaffer@boz.ie.
Are we still giving away that bag of shite that we have outside for bag of GEA memorabilia?
There's some cracking books and
there are
what Morris should have put in that was football not included.
Oh really? No, we'll show it.
We'll sneak it out of the office.
We'll get in trouble, but we'll do it.
Those oaks are 50 quid a pop, you know. They don't grow on trees.
So you can get your session on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter to @boz.ie. Until then, mind yourself.
You stole his line. You can't say mind yourself.
That's my line.
I want to see you coming back in here with ducky jerseys. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jerseys.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.